You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/moviebs. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, or typewriter. audibletrial.com/moviebs.
Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS. With Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Ginger Quill.
Oh, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story to Robert Pattinson killed a clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right! I said tune in weekly.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Bear. Here is Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, I'm Eric D. Snyder, one of the hosts of this show, and that's Jeff Bear, the other host of this show. We're brought to you by OneOfUs.net.
Does it feel like the fall?
Kind of does right this minute because it's overcast, but it's about to get really hot for a week. So.
And still, there's something about school starting. I don't know.
I don't have kids starting school, so it does not affect me.
It's the dream.
And yours isn't even real school yet, right? It's pre-K.
Right. It's the illusion of it's 8:30 to 3.
Yeah. Oh.
It is in a classroom, and their kind of goal here is to mimic what kindergarten will eventually be.
Hmm.
So
give a little practice run.
Sure.
Dress rehearsal for kindergarten. Good idea.
You better get it right.
Oh man. Embarrassing. How embarrassing if he doesn't get kindergarten right. Anyway, we have an iTunes review.
Ooh, I like starting the show with an iTunes review.
Hmm?
Hey, how do we make sure that we always start a show with an iTunes review?
By people writing iTunes reviews for us on iTunes.
And then what will you do with that information?
Then I'll read it on the show in old-timey voice.
Sounds perfect to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to do that right now.
All right, I'll wait patiently. You let me know when you're done by talking in a normal voice after the old-time radio voice.
This is by Wife of Odin 777. You may recall we had a review by Odin a couple weeks ago.
Uh-oh.
And she says, the only podcast we agree on. Hilarious, charming, informative. Before Movie BS, long car rides were often fraught with disagreements on music and a refusal to listen to each other's podcasts. Then there was this BS. I married a cinephile, and this podcast actually makes me care to listen to movie opinions. My husband is the reviewer Odin 777, real name is Ian, mentioned on the last episode. To be clear, he doesn't think he's a god, he just acts like it. But hopefully no Norse nations are worshipping the god Ian, from Asgard, commonly known as New Orleans, Stephanie. Thank you, Stephanie.
Nice. Great city, too.
And Ian.
Man.
I've heard good things.
Wait, what? You've never set foot?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when you can get... Actually, I'll even say this. When you can get decent weather in New Orleans, it's an amazing season or city. Just amazing.
Now, take out that I don't drink. Still
the food,
fun.
The food.
Oh, food. And they have good food. Yeah, they have good food.
And the music. Oh, my gosh. Oh, you just like you hop from one place to the next. And it's just the energy is amazing.
I feel like most of what I ever hear about New Orleans has to do with Mardi Gras. And it's always like what I hear about Las Vegas. Which is if you don't drink or go to whorehouses, then it seems like a lot of the fun is gone.
I don't think I would ever go to New Orleans during Mardi Gras again. That is passed me by.
Oh, I know. Again, oh. You said. Yeah, again.
Right.
You've
like
done
I've
once.
Done
yeah.
that.
Well,
was that twice? I think I've done it twice.
Sure
who knows?
You
who,
now.
Can, who can remember such things?
You're in your 40s now.
Thank goodness,
no one
by
wants.
The way.
No one wants to see your boobs.
And thank goodness there's not the digital data to recollect that trip. Yeah. Anyway, New Orleans is amazing. And that review was pretty phenomenal, too. I'm always surprised when a wife listens to the show. And what I mean by that is women, of course, you listen to the show.
Yeah.
But a wife listening typically means the guy was like, here, you should listen to this too.
Right.
And I just don't see that scenario in podcast form in this niche of slight comedy and movie review. I just don't like see a wife being like, oh, I would love to give that an opportunity, even though I'm not the hardcore movie fan that you are, or whatever the case
you
may
have
be.
You have a hard time relating to the idea of someone's wife being interested in any movie podcast, let alone this particular one.
I mean, we know that mine knows that I do this.
Yes.
We know that officially now. Mm-hmm. We figured that out after year 4 or 5.
She's walked in on it a couple of times.
She has.
Speaking of this podcast, you brought this to my attention the other night, and I did some research. We are Movie BS with Baron Snyder. There's a new podcast called BS Movies.
BS Movies?
Yeah, called BS Movies.
It's new?
It started like last September. After we'd only been doing our show for 6 years.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's guys named like Brian and Shelley or something, so the BS thing.
Ugh.
Yeah. So I don't know if maybe they thought of Movie BS and then Googled it and found that I was taken, so they went to BS Movies instead. I don't know if they just didn't think about it. I don't feel like BS Movies would be your first choice. I feel like Movie BS sounds better. I don't know. Anyway, the point is...
We've definitely been saying Movie BS for a few years, so maybe that's our influence the title.
Yeah.
But BS Movies just doesn't make sense.
Not to me. But I look, they only have a few dozen followers on Twitter. I don't think they're going anywhere. I don't think anyone's going to mix us up. I think we're okay.
You're not going to attack. You're not getting the claws out.
No.
Okay. Nope.
I think we're okay for now. If they get too popular, then we'll crush them.
Yeah. One of them's not tall, right?
No.
Oh, okay. If that would just be the breaking point for me.
All right. Enough of that. Let's talk about some movies.
I like doing that.
Let's talk about Patty Cakes.
This stars Danielle McDonald, and she is most definitely front and center in this film that is about an overweight white female who is desperate to rap.
Lives
and she's in
New Jersey.
Jersey.
Jersey is one of the worst places, and she lives there. And this actress, Danielle McDonald, is Australian, by the way.
I knew that.
Yeah, so she wants to be a rapper. The style of the movie, in the style of those rags to riches, starting from nothing, you know, a star is born, trying to work your way to the top, making it big.
It is the template for almost every sports movie, the template for almost every aspiring musician movie.
Right.
It has all of the standard beats there.
Hearing it talked about at Sundance, I think that I had expected it to be more of an outright comedy, and it's got funny stuff. You know, it's not super serious or heavy, but it's more of a dramedy with these people with these hard scrabble lives and big dreams and everything. Patty is her name. Her mother also is a dreamer. Formerly was going to be a singer and now is it? Did you recognize the mom, Bridget Everett?
Oh, yeah. Yep, Bridget Everett's in the comedy blanket, the comedy bed, whatever. I don't even know a term I'm making up here right now, of Amy Schumer. So
yeah,
I've seen her stand up a little bit here and there. I've heard her voice before, so I knew she could sing.
Patty's mom, Patty's grandma, Kathy Moriarty, is also involved. And Kathy's got a friend, or Patty, rather, has a friend named, what do they call him, Jerry? Who's Indian American, works at a pharmacy, also wants to be a rapper.
He's more of the Dr. Dre, the P. Diddy. He wants to be a hand in the beats and the shaping of the music, whereas Patty is the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then you need somebody else. You need somebody to engineer the whole thing.
Yes, apparently.
You do.
There's always like 30 people credited on these songs. So yeah, there's I guess a lot of a technical crew involved.
And what's this guy? Well, what's this guy's name?
We're looking at Mamadou Athi, the actor.
Yes. I recognize him from The Get Down. To me, he's got that endearing soul that you would hope for out of an individual that you're watching on screen, even though this performance is so reserved to the point where you're just like, can you please speak up?
His character is this quiet, goth, death metal kind of guy who lives in a shack in the woods, sort of deliberately weird.
That is a good shed. The movie to me really picks up when this weird shed is stumbled upon, and then they can like motivate as a team.
Right.
That the movie definitely has an uptick there. Otherwise,
he becomes their producer.
I kept kind of waiting for it to take off until that point.
Patty is actually very good at rapping, so it's not a joke. She's not a delusional. I mean, she's a chubby white girl. She has that working against her, but she's good at it. She's good at the freestyling, and she gets in the rap battles with the guy, and you know she's good at that. And the movie is you know fun, I guess, more or less. Here are my problems with it. It tries to really be that dramatic, trying to make her way to the top kind of story, but it treats it all very glib and shallowly. It's a very very shallow version of that story, and I think it would have been better if it had stayed light and jokey and mm-hmm. not necessarily to make fun of Patty, but make it more like, hey, get a load of this fat white girl trying to be a rapper. Like, play more with that awkwardness or whatever, because it doesn't do a good. It doesn't get serious enough about treating it seriously. And the issues, the minor issues of like cultural appropriation, it gets yelled at one point by a rapper, mm-hmm. a black rapper. But that's as far as that goes. That what could be an issue worth exploring, and just sort of brushes past it.
Yeah, and it also for me, it really does have its typical music moments, like oddly, she's able to meet an idol of hers, which it felt squeezed in there.
Such a contrived situation. Yeah.
And then moments of her deciding, well, okay, now I'm not going to try anymore. Like these things just kind of, yep, they just kind of felt squeezed in. And I would say Jeremy Jasper is the writer director here. Don't know if they had hand in editing. It felt like it needed a cleaner cut in general, like better transitions from one to the next. Like there was one moment that got me from like singing to vomiting that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it felt like some humor was left on the table due to those weak transitions and not as tight editing as it could have been.
The climax is very contrived. It, of course, comes down to a performance. There are important judges in the audience, and not just important judges, but like every person she's ever met in her life is in this audience. Everyone that has ever taunted her or told her she couldn't do it.
Yeah.
The recording studio where she kind of had an embarrassing moment, those people are there. The guy that she had a rap battle with, those people are all there. That actually started making me laugh. How many, it was like a curtain call for the movie. Everybody who was mm-hmm. in it shows up here. And it's fine. The moments where the rapping stuff is fun.
I think the rapping's really good.
The stuff with their friends is fun.
I want to hear some of the songs again. That's how it felt for me.
The guy that they meet up with in the shack, he's sort of the magical Negro character. He's sort of the black guy who comes along very magically. We don't know who he is, where he comes from. He lives in a shack in the woods, crying out loud, and just sort of magically helps things. And also,
he also
makes it okay for her to be a white girl rapping because he's a black guy and he accepts her.
And he goes with the flow consistently when all signs would have pointed that he wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Like everything is just like anti him in the beginning. It's like, well, wait, why does he allow them in this shed? Why is he going to help them now? Why is this? Why is that? And we don't know.
And even just the reason, he is. Even the reason for their needing him is contrived because they went to a recording studio and had an embarrassing moment. And so then I guess that's the only recording studio in the city. I mean, like they're what? So they just gave up at that point? I don't know. It feels to me like the work of a writer director who needed more voices involved in helping him make this a little tighter and leaner and sensible. It has a good heart. Not bad. But
and Daniel McDonald, I think it's a really good performance. Like I guess that's the thing. I think Bridget Everett is good and compelling. Daniel McDonald is as well. And so are the guys in this cast. And that's the weird thing to me. It just feels like, they found some characters that haven't been explored on screen in a typical formula. And it worked out well for them this time. Like, I don't necessarily think that this could be something that, the director could really bring forth time after time.
No, and it's, I don't know, have we not seen these characters? We've certainly seen characters like this, maybe not specifically a chubby white girl from Jersey rapping.
No, that's, but, I guess that's what I'm saying, specifically.
Eh. It's a B-.
It's a 7 out of 10. Patty cake. Patty cakes, a.k.a. kill a pea, is a 7 out of 10.
And cakes has a dollar sign, obviously.
Next up, I do until I don't. Oh.
I didn't see this movie.
Yeah. So I love Lake Bell.
Yeah,
I think I think she's great. And she wrote and directed a film called, what's that called again? In a World. In a World. Because it was all about the trailer voice.
Yeah.
Yep. Her dad was famous for it. She wanted to be good at it. And I really liked that film. It's one that I would recommend you seek out. So she's writing and directing another film. It's got a really good cast, including herself, Ed Helms, Mary Steenburgen, Paul Reiser, Amber Heard, and Wyatt Cenac. There's your core right there. And it's about marriage. Mm. So there we go. I'm in. I'm excited.
But then what?
It's just there is such a lack of heart with these characters, and it feels kind of tone deaf in some of the choices that Lake Bell makes. And so it's really weird when the movie, you find it suddenly like 20, 25 minutes left in the thing. You find moments compelling, like the repair of some relationships or the moving forward or whatever the case may be, are intriguing. And suddenly these characters are acting a little different and also good.
Right.
To where you're like, well, was it as annoying and bad as I thought? And it kind of is. And here's the thing. Dolly Wells plays this British documentarian who feels like she's an expert on the concept of marriage. And her big thing is marriage should be for 7 years, and then you can renew your contract if you want.
Okay.
Otherwise, you walk away.
All right.
The problem is she's come up with this theory as she's being really kind of petty and immature about her breakup that she just had. So, like, she's sad that she was broken up with, and she's kind of manifesting it into this. And then she wants to make a documentary following these couples.
Yeah.
And everyone has their own hang up or issue, but then she's trying to exploit it. And Lake Bell plays this sheepish yes woman that it just feels like
doesn't sound like her at all.
It doesn't sound like her at all. And if it didn't say written and directed by Lake Bell, I would have never imagined that she put herself in that position. And again, she has a slight payoff in the end, just like Amber Heard does and everything else and Paul Reiser. But it still feels so contrived and almost upsetting that it just it's not worth it. So it's a 4 out of 10. Do until I don't is something that's worth skipping. And I really wish that wasn't the case, because everything about it on paper was up my alley.
It'll be easy to skip because it's playing in no theaters and nobody will see it.
Well, that's not true.
It'll be easy to avoid.
Yes, that will be true.
I saw a couple movies. I caught up with Wind River. You liked okay a few weeks ago.
I did. It was solid. I think I gave it a 7 out of 10. I know that I gave it a 7 out of 10 because my memory sometimes works.
And I'm giving it a B+.
You son of a... You did this on purpose, I think.
I liked the movie on purpose.
No, you let me see it first. And then you were like, what are you going to give it? All right. I'll make it your fault that it's not BS approved. Brilliant.
All right. That's a sound theory.
It's a theory.
Yeah, work on that.
Yeah,
really good. Jeremy Renner, Elizabeth Olsen, The Indian Reservation. I like, it's murder mystery, and the mystery does not go unsolved, but it's not about that so much as about overall what has happened to the Indian people on the reservations and the way they're treated and white man and all that. And I really like the way Taylor Sheridan, who wrote and directed it, I really like the way that he eventually does explain what happened on the night in question.
Yeah.
Narratively, how that all is really good. But yeah.
And what do you think? What do you think of Jeremy Renner's performance here?
He's good.
Yeah.
Some of his monologue where he's talking about grieving over a lost child is some of his best work. Stuff.
Good stuff.
Wind River. And then what else did I see? Oh, and I also saw one of the movies that opened last week that they didn't screen for anybody.
The Last Littlest Dragon or something?
Birth of the Dragon.
Ah, there it is.
And this is based on a true story. In 1964, Bruce Lee, not yet a legend, San Francisco, had a fight with a Shaolin master named Wong Jack Man, who was fresh off the boat from China or somewhere. And he's Chinese, but I think he was living in Taiwan when he came over. I mean, he is okay. Chinese. Yeah, no.
Okay.
Just wasn't sure where he'd come from most recently.
Just, all right.
And in real life, this fight changed Bruce Lee's attitude about his fighting style and helped cure for his later success. And the movie waters all that down and makes the real main character is some fictional white guy taking kung fu lessons from Bruce Lee. And the movie presents it as this guy, as he likes a Chinese girl who's working for Chinese gangsters. And in order to get her free, he makes these two, the two agree to do a fight for her freedom, which is silly and dumb. And the fight itself is anticlimactic. And even if you just want to see some sweet martial arts action, pretty disappointing.
Oh.
Watered down, not even really a biopic. It was exceedingly generic and mediocre. Waste.
All right. I keep thinking about, like, now what The Last Littlest Dragon would be about and how cute this little dragon is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what I was focusing on. But, like, I listened to some of that and I didn't like the sound of it
at all. Yeah, no, that's fine. It's not a good movie. It's like a C minus. That's all the reviews we have this week. It's, you know, Labor Day weekend. Last week was pitiful, and this week's even more pitiful. There's
it's,
one,
like, it's like they're not trying.
They really aren't. There's one wide release from the Weinstein Company called Tulip Fever that they've delayed and delayed and delayed.
Yeah, what's the deal with this? I don't know. Okay. It sounds like not only did they delay it once they had the movie, but there was like massive delay before they even made the movie as well.
I think so. Yeah, it's been some work, and so now, like they even canceled a press screening like 2 weeks ago in New York. Like put a sign on the door saying sorry, we're not showing this after all. Everything
is not good.
Given rise to jokes that the movie does not actually exist.
Man, are you like you have to be ecstatic that you broke up with Dane DeHaan when you did?
Yeah, he's gone downhill this year.
I mean, ever since. I mean, I don't want to say it is you. Like, since you left him, he's been nothing.
He
but
was,
like,
he was never, like, you know, first string anyway.
No, but he was up and coming.
Sure, he was up and coming.
And now it appears he's not.
Yeah. He needs to grow into his face. He needs to be as old as he looks. Once he's as old as he looks, then maybe he'll be able to do some better work. And now it's the end of the summer. We have a couple of loose ends to tie up with the Summer Box Office Challenge. We have data. We, of course, chose 20 movies, hoping that those would be the 20 movies that had the best opening weekends. Now we have the actual top 20 of the summer, and we did pretty well. There's only three movies in the top 20 that neither of us chose.
Yeah, three misses. All right, give it to them.
All right. One is All Eyes on Me, Tupac biopic,
mm-hmm.
which, as far as we knew, came out of nowhere. It was typical with movies aimed at black audiences. They tend to underpromote it and underscreen it, and then act surprised when people watch it. All Eyes on Me, The Hitman's Bodyguard, the 17th Sam. Best opening of the summer.
Yeah, that's so surprising. That was Ryan Reynolds, Sam Jackson. I avoided it because there was no breakout potential with that.
Yeah, it was
is what my thinking was because of the August release date. Because Ryan Reynolds wasn't a superhero called Deadpool. Yeah.
That one, I remember considering that one and thinking it might, but the late summer release date is what made me think it probably was not actually as good as it seemed like it could be. And then Baby Driver, which we skipped because it had a Wednesday opening. And even with that Wednesday opening, it's Friday through Sunday was still 20 million.
Wednesday opening, and look at Edgar Wright's history.
Oh, yeah. It's now.
This is his best, like, as far as money goes, this is it for him. This is the
made,
big one.
It's made more than all his other movies combined, I think, in the U.S. So that was a nice surprise.
Yeah.
And then three of the movies that I did pick did not make the top 20. Those being Atomic Blonde, Valerian, and King Arthur. Wow, it's amazing that I won, really. We also...
Oh, we had a suggestion from a listener.
What was the listener's name?
Tyler. Tyler came through with a wonderful idea.
We like this. And basically, if I can... I don't have the email in front of me, but as I remember it, I'm gonna distill the information.
So I just have a curiosity here. I'm staring at the email, and what you would like to do is you would like to guess what the email said.
I would like to summarize my recollection of this email.
Okay, go right ahead.
It is that before we do the draft for the movies...
You're doing great so far.
We see if we agree on what we think the biggest opening weekend will be of the summer.
Technically, we will have to write this down.
We'll each write down what we think will be the top movie. Usually, it tends to be the same one, and then
we'll slide it across the table to each other.
And if we have written down the same movie, we both think will be the big one, then we eliminate that. Neither of us gets that movie.
Gone.
So that removes the problem of whoever gets first pick gets the big obvious choice. If we have written down two different movies, we have different ideas of what the big one will be. Then those are simply each of our first picks.
Yep.
Go from there. I like that idea a lot because I think most years we've done this, there's been one that we agreed was going to be the big, and we were right too. We've always been right on what the biggest of the summer was going to be. Kind of helps level the playing field a little bit, so it's not so much the advantage of whoever that first movie.
Well, and it's also just nice in there is something nauseating about feeling like after the draft, well, I didn't get Guardians of the Galaxy. My summer's done.
Yeah.
And then having that play out, like, sure, it could have gone differently, but it didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Tyler, for that suggestion. We will implement that next year unless we change our mind.
Oh, right. And that's in addition to the idea of going three movies. We each have to have three movies in May, three movies in June.
I'm not totally sold on that. I don't know if I'm totally sold on that. Talk about that one.
I just like the back and forth aspect that creates.
Yeah, we can
forced into it.
It's a possibility. On the DVDs this week, hey, it's your chance to see Baywatch. You know they made a movie of Baywatch?
You don't have to.
Yeah. That's out now then if you want to.
The Rock, Zac Efron. Nah. Butting heads.
Christ.
It is.
And My Cousin Rachel, which is a pretty decent a period piece with Rachel Weisz as someone named Rachel blows my mind, and it's a woman who may be dangerous, ooh, perhaps has something up her sleeve.
Oh, is that long? How's the pace on that movie?
No, it's not long. It's like an hour and 45. Fine. Pace is not an issue.
All right,
good stuff. And what else? What is there? Something else here? DVD.
Born in China.
Yeah, that was Disney documentary Pandas, I think, right?
Yes. I look forward to sticking Dylan in front of that one day and watching it.
And speaking of pandas...
What?
Yeah, we have a giveaway about a movie with a raccoon in it.
Hey, they're animals too.
Yeah, exactly. They're all in the same family. Pandas, raccoons. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We have a Blu-ray DVD copy of it.
It is technically open, but it is unplayed.
Untouched by human hands.
That's
so,
right.
If you were an agent like this movie, send us an email, moviebspdx@gmail.com, and tell us you're an agent, and we'll put you in the running. We'll choose someone.
That's right. And we assume this won't make its way to the chips, you regulars.
Yeah, no, probably. We assume an agent will grab this one up.
Yeah, that's right.
If you would like to be an agent and be eligible for such contests, you just have to become one of our Patreons. Go to movieupbs.com, a link there. You know, $1 a show, and you're in the running for perks like that.
Oh, and free commentaries.
And the free commentaries.
Oh, God. I just, like, I honestly, I forget that I have to do the Paul Blart Well, cop. I was thinking about it. You know, okay, so that was one of the losses, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about. Paul Hart, Malkop 2, I have to do my own individual commentary on this.
That one we're going to release for free to everybody.
That'll be free for everybody. You know what would have been a better choice?
What?
For you? Mm. Having me do Patch Adams.
Why? I like that movie.
I know I like that movie, but then I would be, like, anytime I say I like that movie, especially if we're at a film festival, the other critics like to get a pile of people together, point at me and laugh and like throw things at me and say, guess what he just said? Guess what he just likes?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then this would have been my nightmare scenario of like being with this movie and constantly feeling like I have to prove why it's good over the entire course of the commentary. So I'm just saying, missed opportunity for me.
Yeah, actually, I did consider that, but I was afraid that you would actually love it and just love everything about it too much. Defeat the purpose.
I guess it really would. If I was in one of my good moods or bad moods, it really would have mattered.
Yeah. It's time to talk about our movie of the month.
Ah, the movie of the month.
The movie of August, and it took us most of August to watch it.
You people are probably only halfway through, and that's understandable. So just go ahead and pause this one. Finish that movie, and then come on back and talk to us about it. Or listen to us. One or the other.
The movie was The Best Years of Our Lives from 1946. And we had been shamed on the show a couple of times for not watching it, so we finally did. When we chose it, we did not realize it was 2 hours and 50 minutes long.
I also don't necessarily know why we were shamed.
It was because it came up once on Character Casserole. It came up, and we had to admit that we had not...
Oh, that's
it.
Right.
And then it came up again later somehow, too, in a similar way, I think. We've seen it now, though. And this movie won the Oscar for Best Picture. It won.
What?
It won Best Director, Best Actor, Screenplay.
What?
Supporting Actor.
Oh, my gosh.
Film Editing.
See, one thing that we should say right here and now.
Yeah.
I watched the movie. You watched the movie.
Right.
And then you dove into a little research, which I was planning on doing. And then part of me was like, what if I went in fresh to this? Because all I know is this movie. I don't know who these people are. I don't know why this movie is important for me to see. So let's just go from there.
Okay. Do I have to explain to you why it's good? Is that part of my job, too?
It might be part of your job.
I'm going to refer you to all the other people who have written about why it's good.
Okay.
It's a story of three men all returning from the war, sort of representing three different types of men who returned from the war. Got Al, the older of the three, who gets back and doesn't know what to do with his life, can only think of himself in relation to what he did in the war.
Yeah.
Like wants to go out drinking with his war buddies.
He is a drinker.
He does not want to go home. Like he loves his wife and his family, he just doesn't feel at home there anymore because of the war. And then Fred, younger, he'd quickly gotten married right before he went off to war, and now his wife is uninterested, a nightclub singer or something.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a seems to me like. And he doesn't know what to do. And then you have Homer, who comes back from the war.
Younger, right?
A little bit younger, yeah.
Yeah.
And he comes back missing his hands.
Yep.
Left his hands overseas.
But as Forrest Gump would say, he's got magic hands.
He's got hooks for hands now. And so that's all about him adjusting to that. He's got a fiance who he worries if she will still want him, et cetera. So three kind of different scenarios representing the millions who came back from the war and had to adjust to life.
I am emotionally invested in this film from the get-go, mainly because of Homer. Mm-hmm. And his hands and how chipper he occasionally is about everything. But then his dark side as well. It's just like the simple fact that he doesn't bring himself to open emotionally to this woman who's been waiting for him is very intense and cool.
Yeah. And he's learned to use the hooks amazingly. He can, he can light a cigarette and everything and very impressive. What?
Here's the thing.
If you lost your hands, you'd quit smoking?
No, that's what I was thinking.
I was thinking, why continue to have an activity that requires my hands?
Well, because he's really proud of what he can do with his hands.
Well, that's true.
As is the movie, And I have to wonder, is this movie paid for? Like, is it like
by the Hooks for Hands industry?
The Hooks for Hands industry, because there are, oh man, I don't know, 7 moments probably in the movie where the movie slows down.
Yeah.
And it's already like a nice steady pace, but the movie slows down and just watches Homer try to do something.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
That is the total importance of the scene, the showcase of, look at what Homer can do, everybody. Hey, people without hands are people too.
Did you not find that impressive, what he could do? I was mesmerized.
I found it informational. That's not how drama works. Like, it was literally just like, if you lost your hands, you would watch this segment to learn how to do this with hooks. That's what it felt like.
To me, it felt weird. It felt like, I was emotionally compelled to see this guy, because he clearly, the actor clearly does not have his hands. So this clearly is really a guy who is...
Yes.
Who was doing this.
Okay, so had Harold Russell acted before?
Harold Russell lost his hands in World War II.
Okay.
On D-Day. Actually, not at D-Day.
Oh, my gosh.
Not at D-Day, but he was in North Carolina training. Oh, he was doing training and lost his hands in an explosion there. And then he was in an instructional film that the Army made about, there's lots of guys in this situation now, about living with prosthetics. And director William Wyler, who had made some films for the Army during the war, he saw this training thing and saw the guy and was impressed by what he could do. I think the part had been supposed to be somebody damaged in some other way. And they changed it to this. And yeah, no, the guy was not an actor. He never really acted again. And he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for this movie. He also was given an honorary Oscar because of, you have to remember, this movie came out in November of 1946.
The war just got over. It's insane.
This movie exists at this time.
Trust me.
The war had ended just over a year ago. And there were many people coming back from the war who were screwed up in some way, many of them physically like this. And so it was huge. And the movie was a giant hit. It was the biggest box office hit since Gone with the Wind. It was huge. The amount of money, it made $23 million, which at today's ticket prices would be something like $490 million. Giant, massive hit.
It is amazing how, like, and again, this movie is solid. And I'm not, it just feels, it wildly goes from melodrama, which is, you know, the times as well, that makes perfect sense, to like amazingly witty banter. When the guys are together, like amazingly, like Al, the character of Al is like whip smart, like comedically intelligent, and has some like really zippy, tiny one-liners that like almost go unnoticed. But like, okay, here's my other question. How old is Fred?
Fred, the character?
Yes.
I mean,
how old do you think Fred, the character, is?
Seems like supposed to be early 30s.
Early 30s. Okay.
Seems like, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. I believe he states in the movie that he was in the war for 3 or 4 years doing this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
2 years of being a soda jerk beforehand.
Yeah.
That's his entire work experience. What the hell was this guy doing in his 20s? Like, I understand coming from a poor upbringing. I totally get that. And his dad is with this woman, and they live under train tracks in a shack that is okay. It's an okay shack as far as shacks go.
Sure. We've seen better shacks.
What the heck is Fred doing with his 20s? I need to know.
That's a good question.
Because this does not make sense. Because I kept trying to figure out, are they trying to make him a 24-year-old? And they're just, like, not saying it.
I think that's probably
the math.
I mean, the way you say it, yeah, having been a soda jerk and then the war, yeah, the character must be about 25 or so. And, yeah, just the actor is old.
But here's the problem with that. He's constantly referring to Peggy as being the young – it's Peggy, right? The one that is Al's daughter?
Yes.
That is Al's daughter who – Fred has some nice comforting moments with early before he's able to reconnect with his wife. And she is clearly a kid versus him.
Right.
So then it's just like, well, wait, what is her age?
Well, but especially in 1946, there's no conflict at all for a 25-year-old man thinking of a 20-year-old woman as a kid. I mean,
right. But again, we don't know what this we don't know the math. We don't know how old Fred is.
I think it
was dumbfounding to me because you look at him and I bet he's 45 when he made the movie. Something like that.
Something like that. I think it's just a matter of the actor being too old for the character.
Yeah.
Yes. He was 38. Right. Oh, the other thing about Harold Russell, who played the guy with the no hands, he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, but he also, the Academy gave him an honorary award for, let me see if I can find the actual wording here, for bringing hope and courage to his fellow veterans through his appearance. I mean, because it really was a very inspiring thing for people to see, and they gave him the honorary award because they didn't think that he would win the competitive award. They saw he was nominated, but he's not going to win, and he did win. And he's the only person to ever win two Oscars for the same role, and one of only two non-professional actors to ever win an Oscar. The other being the gentleman from The Killing Fields.
I need to make sure that people understand this. I'm not dismissing this movie by any regard. I think it's an extraordinary film that exists that is so closely connected to World War II. And it makes perfect sense that this is a movie that would actually help our society at that time understand what the heck these men went through during the war. I fully like all of that is absolutely amazing. But as a movie itself, there are just like tiny little things. Like
as a movie itself that you're watching 70 years later.
Yes, completely. Yes. But like even there's some oddities here, like the details that are gone into just don't happen in other movies. And what I mean by that is like when they go, when they're just at a diner having a meal, like the exact price is talked about. Like, well, let's see. You had this, and that's this much, this, and that's this much. So that would be this much.
They mentioned a few people's salaries too. Like someone's getting $32.50 a week. Yeah,
right. Like there's like really weird specific details that are in there that normally just movies for time's sake, for the lines, for actors being union or not. Like you just kind of buzz through these things, and they kind of extended there. How much did you love the? The Italian restaurant that they go to and the guy serving them. Hey, he's got the Italian accent. Just the perfect.
I liked Hook for Hand's uncle.
come on.
Name Hook for Hand. Homer's uncle.
And then Butch.
Uncle Butch owns a bar, and the uncle is Hoagy Carmichael, who was a famous singer and performer back in the day. And,
that was your first favorite part, right? When
he sat down and played the piano. Because as you know, when I see someone playing a piano in a movie, I always want to look and see if the hands look like they could actually be playing those notes. And it was obvious that he clearly was playing that. And so I knew he had to be somebody who did that because he's having a conversation while he's playing the piano, which is not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Hoagy Carmichael, I like him. I like what he does with nephew.
I definitely like the idea of the overall. So Al works at a bank, and his whole thing is he's put in charge of something that he doesn't necessarily feel qualified for, but then has a weird relationship with it, which is the idea of small loans, specifically to soldiers returning.
The veterans, yeah.
And some really good stuff comes out of that, like really good emotional, like hits you today kind of stuff, like mm-hmm. what you hope America stands for, that kind of thing. But then on the other hand, there's so much smoking, and there's smoking right before – there's like smoking right before bed. Like the last thing you do at night is get a couple of drags from a cigarette. And it's hard, you know, for Homer to do that sometimes because of the hooks. But like just like all of these – there's so much meat to enjoy with this movie that like part of me is just like, man – if it could be condensed just so I could keep rewatching it, there's like something new to discover every time, it feels like. But yeah, like I just
you can see how at the time it was unusual. There have been plenty of movies about the war, of course, but to address directly this problem of what to do when veterans come home, and it was not being dealt with, and it raised some difficult issues that people weren't talking about at the time. And it's great that it was such a hit. It apparently was a cathartic moment for America, and I can relate to some of it with people coming back from anything. Like some of the elements of coming back to your hometown, or even if you're just coming back from college, or I was thinking of, you know, I was a missionary. Missionaries would come back and reintegrating into regular life. Not exactly the same thing, but similar. There's some parallel feelings and emotions there that relate to.
And what's weird is for a movie this long, it almost ends quickly.
It does wrap up kind of quickly.
It's just like, whoa, that was the point. You know, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised you're leaving because you really went into every detail about everything. I found this movie fascinating and weird and lovely, and I really like the fact that we watched it.
There you go, The Best Years of Our Lives. Fine film, and another one to cross off of the Best Picture winners. There's still a handful of those that I haven't seen.
We'll get to them. Don't you worry.
Our movie of the month for next month, or this month.
For September
is a from 1967, from 50 years ago. And it's called In the Heat of the Night. In the Heat of the Night.
This is when America had problems with racism.
We were having
67.
Yeah, some racism problems back then.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting, a period piece, to see what that was like back when there was racism problems. 1967 was a pivotal year for movies, and this was one of the Best Picture nominees. I think it's the only one of the five that I haven't seen. Glad to finally cross that one off the list as well. The same year as The Graduate and Great of Virginia Woolf and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and another one that I can't remember. So In the Heat of the Night, the movie, not the TV show.
In the Heat of the Night, directed by the man that gave us Fiddler on the Roof and Jesus Christ Superstar.
True. You know what the Best Years of Our Lives director, William Wyler, you know what he also gave us? Ben-Hur.
Oh.
Yeah. He had a long career. He was, well, I think one of the most nominated directors ever, William Wyler was. Best Years of Our Lives was like his sixth nomination in 10 years or something. He was the shiz. As they say.
Back then.
So, In the Heat of the Night. Who directed In the Heat of the Night?
Norman Jewison.
Norman Jewison. Is that really the name he went by? Or is that like a slur?
Did I? No.
No, I'm kidding. Jewison? His name's Jewison, really?
A little on the nose.
Well, I mean, a little bit. So watch that by next month. And that brings us to the end of our show. You got patty cakes, which is all right.
Yeah. I liked it a little bit more than you did.
Yes,
you did. It's a standard crowd pleaser. That's the attempt of it with a little bit different window dressing.
And I do ... until I don't, which you didn't care for.
Yeah, I don't.
At least you had the option.
Yep. You can choose.
If you're an agent and want a copy of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, send us an email. Be in the running. And until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thank you for listening, and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net, and don't forget your towel.